this morning and appreciate so much the opportunity to come. And if you're visiting here today, well, I'm visiting also, so don't judge these people by me. I'm not going to judge them by you, so don't you judge them by me. But I appreciate so much your coming. We want you to feel welcome. We're just people trying to go back to the Bible. We're just trying to be Christian. That's all we're trying to do, be disciples of Jesus. And we're trying to be Christian. That's all we're trying to do, be disciples of Jesus. And we're trying to follow the Bible. And one thing we're going to look at this week is the dialogue in the first nine chapters of the book of Proverbs. And I'm going to take each time we come together, try to take a chapter. I don't know that I'll finish it, but I'm going to try to do that. Try to take a chapter and to look at each chapter. And if I don't get it finished, I won't be able to go back and do all that. So let's hope we can get through that. But this is the book of the wisdom for all ages. It's somebody has said truisms, things that people understood, the maxims that everybody understood to be true and recognized, principles that stand through the time. Somebody said a proverb is a long life in a short sentence. So there's a whole lot of things, a long life of wisdom to learn what somebody stuck into a sentence. And as you get from the 10th chapter on, you'll notice in the 10th chapter to the 15th chapter, there's a lot of contrast teaching. And then you'll find a lot of just individual statements made. It's kind of like watching Sesame Street. Does anybody remember that? You know, Sesame Street jumps from topic to topic because they know that young men can't stay on track very long. That's the way the Proverbs do. They just kind of jump from thing to thing as you get on through the book. But we want to look at the proverb again as a long life and a short statement. It's a they require a great amount of accumulated wisdom is what we find in them. Solomon wrote over 3,000 proverbs. We only have about 1,000 here, so we don't have all that Solomon wrote. Some believe that not only did Solomon write some of these, but they were compiled by other people. Some believe even as far down as Hezekiah and Isaiah may have contributed to them. And so what we want to do as we look at them is see that the ability, the proverbs teach us or give us the ability to see the cause of events as well as the results and the solution to the problem. A lot of people can see a problem, but they don't know what the solutions are. They don't know the results that will take place in the problem. And the Proverbs are going to teach us how to look at a problem and figure out what would this do if we let this problem go and continue, and what are the solutions? How can we solve the problem? I'm going to show a chart as we go on here about how what most people do with problems and how that we don't generally solve the problems of life. We have a problem with somebody, and we just kind of scratch them off and write them off. We're done with them, and we don't try to solve the problem anymore. And so that's a problem that we have with each other. We're going to call these the building blocks of life. And the first chapter especially is going to emphasize what it is that we need to lay the building blocks of life. And one of the terms here, the word justice and judgment, is just simply the idea of being able to sift through life and figure out how to get life into balance. Have you noticed how that you hear information from people you go to school with, other people that you meet, and your mom and dad are telling you something else, and maybe the preacher's saying something that seems a little foreign to all of that, and you're trying to figure out, how do I get life into balance? How can I, this ideal of taking a sieve, used to be when I was a young boy, we'd take a piece of screen wire and make a net with it and shovel up gravel and sand on it and rock it back and forth and separate the big rocks from the small things to make concrete in those days. Oh, they don't do that anymore. But the ideal of sifting through, being able to discern and to judge and determine when to apply something. You know, in the 26th proverb, just turn there for a moment and notice the writer here says something that seems to be a bit contradictory. It says in Proverbs 26:4, "Answer not a fool according to his folly, lest thou also be like unto him." Verse 5 says, "Answer a fool according to his folly, lest he be wise in his own eyes." Now notice here, it looks like a contradiction, but it's really not. Wisdom is the ability to take some principle that you know when to apply it. You know, a preacher told me years ago that some fellow wanted to have a discussion about something, and he said, well, you know, you could have a discussion with him and have a debate with him, but he said, you know, sometimes it's like wrestling with a hog. You can wrestle with a hog, but the only good is the hog loves to get muddy, and you'll just get muddy wrestling with him. And so you have to learn sometime in life when to get involved in things, and when to say things, and when to apply certain things, and how to balance life out. This is timeless advice. It will never go away. Now, our problem is every generation comes along, and they think, we are smarter. than the generation that came before us. And we you know, somebody has said that common sense, the only problem with today is that it's not very common. You know, people don't have a lot of common sense anymore. So you have to kind of live in a world where you have to think and look at what God said so you can figure out how to live and how to get the best out of it. This is an outline that I got somewhere, and it's a good outline. And I could print that off if you think it would be beneficial to you, the first 9 chapters. But it just shows you the purpose, first of all, of why to read the Bible, why to read Proverbs. What will you get? The principle and the purpose of why to read it in the first chapter, verses 2 through 6. And then we see these Solomon instructing. And notice how this, like in the book of Ecclesiastes, have you noticed the wisdom literature, the ecclesiastical conclusion is appealing to young people. To consider your Creator and to think about how you're living while you're young. Proverbs is addressed to young people. God's concerned about young people. And He knows, young people, that if the devil can get you while you're young, he's more apt to get you there than when you get to be where I am, where you have no hair and no teeth, you know. And so he's more apt to be after you. I've said this when I was in school. We had a great football team in Louisville, Kentucky. And I was a quarterback. I wasn't a very good one. But I would take the program and I would look at it before the game and see the numbers of the men who played in positions like ends and linebackers. And I wanted to see if there's any juniors or freshmen out there, because I knew if they were on the field, I had more chance to trick and to fool a junior and a freshman than I would probably a senior player, chances are. And so I knew that that fellow that was younger did not have the experience. He was probably real good. He wouldn't be out there. But he didn't have the experience. And the devil knows that in life that's the way it is. And so we find these warnings that wisdom gives to us, the call of wisdom, to listen to it, and the rewards, the benefits that come from it. And there's a lot of talk about immorality and fornication, adultery, and things like that. And you might wonder why that's said so much. Well, young people, do you understand why? Can you, I mean, are we fooling each other? Don't we think about that? I wish I could remember a research I'd read somewhere where they did some studies on young men and found that every so many seconds a young man's going to think, if a girl's got something around and she blinks, the young man says, hey, she's interested in me. You know, that's the way young men think. And so we need to see that the Bible says a lot about that. And we're going to talk about it. And really, it seems the instance is, the reason why there's so much said about that is because that he's going to tell us as we go on that when you understand the appeal to be immoral and to do that and how strong that appeal is, the same thing is true about worldly wisdom and wanting to do wrong. It looks like it's fun, enjoyable, but it really is the road to death. And so he's going to show us the same way that a person is drawn and allured to be sexually immoral is the same way that people, the same kind of appeals draw. And so this wisdom of the world draws you, wants you to be commit adultery with the wisdom of the world and not to listen to God. And so we're going to look at that and talk about that some. And then we see the description of wisdom in the 8th chapter and the invitation of wisdom, calling out to every person. She's standing on the street calling out to you, listen. When you go down the street, wisdom's always, have you ever made a mistake and turned in front of somebody or almost hit somebody and they blow the horn at you? Wisdom is saying, watch out, learn how to drive, be more careful. And so wisdom's always crying out at you. Your parents are always criticizing you. Have you ever thought about how corrective information it seems painful to take? Have you ever thought about that? That's the way life is. But if you can learn that is the way life is and surrender to that, you're going to be a lot better, because you're going to one day not only leave your mom and dad who criticize you for the mistakes you make, you're going to get a job. And guess what your boss is going to do? They're going to You're going to get married. And guess what your wife's going to do? Your husband's going to do? It's a way of life. And if we can learn early on to pay attention. Most people, Proverbs is the information highway about life. How to live life. Now, you know what most people are concerned about? Trivia. We learn and live and think about all the things that really are not that important. How many of us have really gone to the PhD level of studying Proverbs, you know? We want to get a PhD in the world, and yet we haven't really given much time to listening to the wisdom that is really about life, how to live life, how to get along, how to deal with people, and how to solve problems. And so in this first chapter, it really makes the appeal to listen over and over. We're going to see that being stated time and time again. And we're going to see in the first 4 verses, or 6 verses, what we might call the faces or the facets of wisdom. How can you see, can you look at somebody and see if they're wise by the way they act, the way they talk, and how they deal with people? A lot of people have information and knowledge about things. There are people who know a lot about the Bible, but they don't know how to use it. They're destructive with it. They use it like a sledgehammer and just go around beating everybody down that doesn't see what they see. And they lack the wisdom, even though they've got knowledge. They don't know how to apply and how to use that information to get the greatest good from it. And so what the Proverbs will help us do is to see that this wisdom is the skill to master life, to live it in the best way, to get the greatest benefit out of life. I've told the story about our information and what we know. You may have heard the story about the boy that was crossing a field, and this bull was out in the field, and he was running across the field, and this bull started chasing him, and this woman was sitting up on her porch watching the fellow run across the field. And so he ran and saw a cave in the field, so he ran in that cave. And she said, "Oh, that fellow is really wise." Well, in a few seconds, he ran out and started running around. The bull chased him again. And so he ran back in the cave after he ran for a while, stayed there a few minutes, and he came back out and ran around. And the woman said, "I've got to tell that ignoramus something." She hollered, "Stay in the cave." He hollered back and said, "There's a bear in the cave." Well, you see information. You see, people look at us and say, "Well, you're a nut. Why are you doing what you're..." Well, we know what God said. It may look like we're a fugitive to the world, but the world is fugitive from God. We're the ones running to God. And so what we do is going to look crazy. They're going to think we're nuts and a part of some kind of a cult, and that we just don't have good sense because we don't... You know, my grandpa, when I was younger, he liked my sister more than me, and I knew that. I mean, I was not smart, but I could see that. And I remember as a young boy, every Saturday, he'd put a nickel and a dime in his hand. He called me Horsefly. He said, "Horsefly, come over here and take your pick." He said, "You pick first." And I thought I was really being smart. I'd take the big nickel. And I couldn't figure out why my sister always smiled. You see, I was just a young fella. And I remember walking home from the store, we were both eating a candy bar, and then later in the evening, she would eat another candy bar. I thought, how is she doing that? Well, you see, I didn't have the common sense to figure out what I was saying. So what we see here is these particles, as we look at the faces and the facets of wisdom, and see these particles about somebody who has the ability to understand things, to see into them, and to comprehend them, and to be able to take counsel from other people, understanding, knowing how to use information right, and to be able to put things to work, and to see how information and facts fit together and what they do when you look at all the facts about something, being able to do that. Wise dealings, just the ability to behave, to conduct yourself in a way that is proper and right. And prudence is the shrewdness, you see. To be able to see things the way they are. To be shrewd. To be streetwise, you see. I've told this about when I was a young boy down in the country, had a four-wheel drive. They were tearing the bridge out down toward town. And I was driving my four-wheel drive down there one morning, and I was a little bit late. And when I went by, going down the way, a friend of mine, his four-wheel drive, came back going the other way, away from where that bridge was at. And we'd been going down where they tore the bridge out. We'd been going through our four-wheel drive, going through the creek, and going around the bridge. Well, I got down there, and the state had gotten tired of us doing that, so they piled a big pile of gravel down there. And I couldn't figure out why when I passed my friend, he was smiling. And I thought, I wonder what he's laughing about. Well, when I got down there, I saw, oh, I've wasted my time. Now I've got to go back. So I started going back, and guess what? I passed one of my friends coming, his four-wheel drive going, and I smiled and went by him. And the point is this. Do you have to go to the dead-end street of drugs? I've been to the dead-end street of drugs. Do you have to go to the dead-end street of pornography? I've been to the dead-end street of pornography. I've walked in Hanya, Crete, through 18 solid blocks of prostitution on that island. I've been in the prostitution places in Germany. Now, I never went with a woman over there, and I'll explain to you about that as it goes on, what motivated me not to do that. My friends went, and I went with them, but I never did give in to that. But I went into those places, and I struggled. I was addicted to pornography, and I've been addicted to drugs. I've been addicted to alcohol. I've had those problems. I've lived with a terrible temper. And I'm going to tell you, that's a dead-end street. Don't drive down there in your four-wheel drive and think you can go through. You can't do it. I'm telling you, it's a dead-end street. Now, can you learn from somebody else? That's what these terms about wisdom are saying. Can you see somebody else who's made a mess? Well, that fellow, he's experienced it, and he knows Solomon experienced it. He knows. And he's trying to tell you, listen, let me tell you, don't go down that road. Don't travel that way because it won't be beneficial for you. And so the writer really just shows us in these statements, if we could break wisdom down and shine it through a prism, I think that's what that thing's called, all the lights break down into different colors. if we could break it down and see that really what we see is it has all these particles, the skill to master life, the ability to make moral decisions and to sift through things and to learn from the experience of other people. Listen to what other people tell you and learn from what they have to say. And not only that, but to be shrewd about it. Make plans and think about your life. If I'm doing this today, what's it going to do in 20 years? Where am I going to be in 25 years? If I do this today, if I'm immoral today, if you give up your purity today, what will I do when you get married in 20 years or 15 years or whenever, or whatever it is, or 5 years? And so we need to look at our life that way and be able to have the ability to look at life and reach good decisions, justice and judgment and equity. Get life, these words are describing the ability to balance this thing all out, you see. You're going through life with one soul, one life, one chance to get it right. You can't come back and do it again. You can't be a young person again. You young men can't go back and be a young man and say, well, I didn't do very well grow up. And you know, one thing I can tell you about me is I obeyed my parents. My mama, when she told me, she remembers when I was about 10 years old, she said, why don't you run away? I said, Mom, I love my home. She said, well, I wish you'd run away. Well, you know, you just need to see that you can't go back and do that again, see? You've only got one shot at living life. And so the writer's helping us see this is the toolbox. Listen, Proverbs 1, verses 1 through 5, 6. The proverb of Solomon, the son of David, king of Israel, to know wisdom and instruction, to perceive the words of understanding, to receive the instruction of wisdom, justice, and judgment, and equity, to give subtlety to the simple, that's just the naive, somebody that doesn't know, there's nothing wrong with being young and being naive, to the young man, knowledge and discretion. A wise man will hear and increase in learning. A man of understanding shall attain on the wise counsel. To understand a proverb and the interpretation of the words of the wise and their dark sayings. And so when my boys were younger, we had three boys and we took a boy in. And on Saturdays, we'd have what I called family counseling sessions. I said, now, boys, we're going to talk at the table here on Saturday here about the mistakes that Dad made this week. But I said, you can't be disrespectful. And I said, and I'm going to tell you some things that you did, and I want you to talk and look at that. And so we just spent time talking about that. And I said, now, listen, when I tell you all something you did, it was wrong. I said, the proverb says a wise son receives instruction, and he makes his father's heart glad and his mother to rejoice. So I said, when I tell you that you did something wrong, don't say, oh, Dad, you didn't start doing all that. I said, if you receive that and hug me and say, oh, thanks, Dad, I'll know you're a wise child. And so they'd play the game, you know. I'd say, boys, you all did this. And you said, oh, thanks, Dad, we love you. And they'd hug me, you know. And we made a game out of it because we knew it was already, I tell them, it's a challenge. When somebody criticizes you, it's a challenge. And it takes a wise person to listen to criticism. But it's what makes people wiser. And a wise man listens when somebody tells you you did something wrong. You listen and you become wiser. And so it gives you the ability to have a toolbox through life so as you can hammer out a character of steel and be able to stand in a world that's trying to destroy you and not make a mess out of your life. And not marry the wrong person or date the wrong people or run around with the wrong kind of folks. We're going to see all of that if the time allows us to get to look at it. But here's these seven pillars the ninth chapter is going to talk about that the Lady of Wisdom is building her house. And so here are these principles that are stated here, the wisdom that we can get by listening to what the Proverbs have to say. What a great blessing it is that God has given us this book so we can see, first of all, the foundational statements. Listen to what we read in verse 7. It says, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. So when somebody tries to tell you something and they start arguing and fussing, you think, well, this person has demonstrated. Now, you know, some criticism is not fair. The Apostle Paul in the 4th chapter of 1 Corinthians said that there were people who... He was not bothered by the criticism of the Corinthians or other men because he knew the Lord judged him. Sometimes criticism is not fair, but listen to all of it. And I'm one of these people, I tell people all the time, if I'm doing something wrong, tell me, you know. I'll try to do better. That's what I'll try to do. So go ahead and tell me. And I tell you what that does. I get a boatload dumped on me most of the time. Because if you indicate to people you're open to criticism, they love to tell you, you see. And so every word I misspell, every sentence that I misstate or verse I misquote, somebody catches me on that. But notice here's the motto of Proverbs. The fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom. And so here the writer is telling us what we've got to do is start off by saying, I've got to have a great respect for God. I've got to respect God. I've got to start at that square. If I intend to learn what life's about, I've got to get that on track first. And we're going to talk about that in the third and fourth chapters, about the priority of that. So what we see here is the writer says that the first stone you want to lay in the building of your life is to make sure that you live in such a way that you respect what God says. Now, you're going to think you're smarter than God sometimes. You're going to think you know about more about life than God knows, and you're going to think that God is dead wrong. I'm going to tell you, that will be a tremendous mistake. You need to respect and honor and revere. God knows. God made you. Have you ever heard the story about the fellow driving down the road? He bought a Henry Ford, one of these Ford automobiles when they were first invented, and he broke down the road, and nobody knew anything about cars because they'd just been invented. And this fellow comes down the road driving, going the other way, and he stopped and said, "Sir, could I help you with your car?" And the man said, "I don't think so." He said, "Nobody knows anything about cars. These are brand new on the road and something's wrong." He said, "Well, would you pop the hood up?" So he raised the hood, or the boot or the bonnet, what they call it in those days. And he tinkered around with the minute. He said, "Try it now." The man started. And the fellow said, "How in the world did you do that? Nobody knows anything about cars." He said, "Who are you?" And the fellow said, "I'm Henry Ford." God designed you. And God knows how to fix you. But you've got to respect Him. If you don't respect Him, He can't do a thing to help you. And that's why God wants us to respect Him and why God wants us to respect our parents, because they've got something to tell us we need to hear. And we need to learn to listen, and that's why you have to respect somebody, because you won't pay attention if you don't respect them. But notice the next building block we want to lay. Once we lay this foundation stone of fearing the Lord, verse 8, "My son, hear the instruction of thy father, and forsake not the law of thy mother, for they shall be an ornament of grace upon thy head and a chain about thy neck." Now notice the law of the mother and the father here is being described as something that will adorn your life. Your parents, believe it or not, they love you. And I tell young people, the 10th chapter, verse 1, talks about when you go out of the house, what you do, how you treat your mother and father, whether it hurts your mother and father or helps them, you know, blesses them. When you go out the door of your house, your mother and father's heart is in your hand. Now, if your mother and father or God didn't care about you, you're taking their heart out in the world wherever you, because they have poured their heart out into you. They've tried to teach you what to do and what to be. So you want to respect them, and you want to listen to what they say, you see. Now, I'm going to tell you, and I tell young people, don't lose the ball game in the fourth quarter. You know what I mean? Juniors and seniors, you're just about to lose your mind. Your parents, you think they're crazy. You think, what's happened to my parents? They used to be smart. Now they don't know what they're doing. I talked to a friend of mine years ago, and he said, you know, it's funny. He grew up, and his daddy was an elder of the church. I said, "David, how did you feel about your daddy growing up?" He said, "From about 1 to 11, he was the smartest man in the world." He said, "From about 12 to about 15, I began to think he was slipping gears. 16 and onward," he said, "that man didn't know anything." He said, "Now I'm 25, he's the wisest man I've ever known." Well, you know, that's the way life is. You're just going to have to see that as you go through life, your parents are going to, it's going to look like they've lost their mind. But they haven't. They've been down the road. If you were going to drive around the edge of the Grand Canyon, the first time you ever got in a car and drive around the edge on the road of the edge canyon, would you want some young person to sit on the side and tell you how to drive? Or would you want your parents who've been around there many times? You see, that's what we pay attention to young people who don't really know. And that's why the Bible teaches young people that as parents, what we need to do, we have parental authority. God has given us that. And we need to use that authority. But we also need to learn that while you're using your authority, you want to teach the Proverbs so that your influence will come up, so you won't have to use authority when they get to be. I'd have hated to try to wrestle my son John. He's a senior. He'd have broke my back. But I didn't. One time he came in the house, he was wanting to go somewhere. I said, "No, you can't do that." I said, "That boy's not good, and you can't go over to his house." And he said, "Oh, come on, Dad." And John was 6'4 and weighed about 200 pounds. And I was, you know, about this size. And so I was studying the Bible with this man. And so I said, "John, just go out in the backyard and play basketball." He said, "Okay, Dad." And so this man said, "How in the world did you do that to that boy? What did you do to him to make him obey you like that?" I said, "It was simple." He said, "What'd you do?" I said, "I terrorized him when he was 2 years old." I said, "He learned to respect me as a little fellow. And I didn't have to teach him that when he was 18, you see. It's too late. You've got to teach from 2 to 5. You've got to get that on the ground. So because if you don't, you'll fight. You've seen parents try to tell you to do something. And no, and he won't listen. And no doesn't mean a thing in the world. They didn't learn when they were 2 years old that you listen to your mother and father. That's the building block of life. And so that's why, good people, That's why Proverbs, some parents don't know what to teach their children. This is what they need to know. This will help them. This will ground them for life and help them to learn. Listen, your teachers in school are going to criticize you. Your friends, you know, my ears and nose were this size when I was born. And my friends called me, what's that flying elephant, Dumbo, because I not only was not handsome, but I was not smart. And so Dumbo really fit me well. And that just hurt me all the time. But that's what I was. That's who I was to my friends, you know. And I had to learn from my grandmother. My grandmother always said, listen, she said, do you know where people have to be to pull you down? I said, Grandma, they're pulling me down. They're hurting me. And it just breaks my heart. She said, do you know where they have to be to pull you down? I said, what do you mean? She said, where does somebody have to be to pull you down? I said, they have to be below you. She said, that's what you need to remember. When somebody's trying to pull you down, you remember the only way they can pull you down, they can't pull you down if they're up above you. She said, there's something about you that they like and they're bothered by that, and so don't you let that bother you. And so that helped me, even though those my friends were really right. My grandmother convinced me they were wrong. And so I survived that. But you see, the writer's telling us that parental authority is so critical, and that what young people need to learn to do is to learn how to listen and retain and highly esteem. Now, sometimes it will be hard, and sometimes your parents will make mistakes. They're not inspired. They're going to make mistakes. You can't throw everything out the window because they make a mistake. They're going to do that, but they care about you. And you see in the book of Proverbs the appeal that is made to listen over and over. You see that? You see there's some kind of advice given, and then if you don't take that advice and listen to it, there's a motivation. There's some consequences to be suffered if you don't listen to what the Bible's trying to tell you and what your parents are trying to teach you, if they're trying to do that. This is the job that parents have, you see, to teach their children. Proverbs, Ephesians 6 and verse 4, provoke not your children to wrath, but bring them up in the nurture and admonition of the Lord. Did you notice the contrast shows what provokes a child? There's a young girl in Madison, she told me several years ago, she said, I hate my parents. She said, when I was young and I wanted to wear immodest clothing, they didn't have the backbone to tell me no. When I wanted to date boys that were not good boys, they didn't have the backbone to tell me no. They wanted to be my friend. When I started drinking and doing other, they didn't have the backbone to stand up. They tried to justify me and hide and cover up for me. And so she said, now I've been through three, I'm in my third marriage, and my life is miserable, and it's because my parents didn't have the backbone to be my parents. Don't provoke your child. Bring them up, train them up, teach them in the instruction, the discipline of the Lord. Don't provoke your child so that they will resent who you are. Be a parent. I've told many times about Diane one time when John, my daddy and I were not close. My daddy was a Marine. When I turned 12, he said, I'm not going to spank you. We're just going to fist fight. And so I put my hands up and I swung. He beat the fire. Don't you ever swing at me. I thought, well, I thought we were going to fight. You know, I didn't understand what the rules were. But you know, when I think about that and look at what my daddy was trying, he didn't know anything. That's all he knew. He knew the Marine way of life, and that's all he knew about life. And so that's the way he dealt with everybody. And it took me a while to figure some of these principles out. But you see here, the next thing the writer says is, listen to what's said in verse 10. If my son, if sinners entice thee, consent thou not. If they say, come with us, let us lie await for blood. Let us lurk privately for the innocent without cause. Let us swallow them up alive as the grave and whole as those that go down into the pit. We shall find all precious substance and we shall fill our house with spoils. Cast in thy lot among us and let us have one purse. My son, walk not thou in the way with them. Refrain thy foot from their path. For their feet run to evil and they make haste to shed blood. Surely in vain the net is spread in the sight of any bird. And they that lay wait for their own blood, they lurk proudly for their own lives. So are the ways of every one that is greedy to gain, which take away the life of the owners there. I want you to see this is a life and death issue. You've only got one shot at this, and you will be a living dead person if you don't pay attention. If you don't get this, you will be a living dead person on your way to a storm. We're going to see, if time lets us see, in this chapter. So the warning about fellowship. Don't join a gang. Be careful. There are two kind of people this chapter is going to tell us to avoid, or the next chapter is going to tell us to avoid, that this wisdom will give us and help us in life. And so steer clear. And the fourth chapter is going to say emphatically in every way, when you see somebody's doing wrong, get away from them. They're going to hurt you. My grandmother, I said, Grandma, I'm going to go with them. She said, don't go with those boys. I said, they're not good. I said, oh, Grandma, they're all. She said, no. I said, they're not going to influence. She said, listen, if you lay with the dogs, you won't become a dog, but you'll probably get fleas. You know, your friends, they're going to influence you some way. So make sure you run with the cream of the crop. If you want your life to go up, pick good friends. Now, they'll get on your nerves. They'll quote the Bible to you and tell you you're doing something wrong. And that'll irritate you and bother you. But they'll help you. And your life will be better. And you'll marry somebody who will love you and help you go to heaven. And you'll probably get a job that you'll be able, you'll love doing what you do. You know what? It's amazing. I get paid doing what I love to do. It almost doesn't seem fair. You know, I love what I do. And people pay me for it. I don't understand why they do it, but they do. But you think of it, that's what you'll be able to dance through life if you listen to what God is trying to tell you and be on guard. And so learn, good people, that friends and who you choose, the powerful influence that your friends have upon you, they'll affect you. Who you date, who you marry, who you spend your time with, they have a tremendous power on you. So choose your friends wisely. Make sure that you choose good friends because they'll have an impact on you. Well, and so the writer's just helping us see in this picture that our peers, don't you see? The people we choose to associate with. And notice the writer goes on and tells us in verse 20. He says, wisdom cries without. She utters her voice in the street. She crieth in the chief place of the concourse in the opening of the gates. In the city she utters her words saying, how long, ye simple ones. Now there's somebody naive. How long, ye simple ones, will ye love simplicity? How long are you going to stay in that condition is the point. And ye scoffers delight in scoffing, and fools hate knowledge. Turn you at my reproof. Behold, I will pour out my spirit upon you. I will make known my words unto you. Because I called, and ye refused. I stretched out my hand, and no man regarded. But ye have set at naught all my counsel, and would none of my reproofs. I also will laugh at your calamity. I will mock when your fear cometh. When your fear cometh as a desolation and your destruction cometh as a whirlwind, when distress and anguish cometh upon you, then shall they call upon me, but I will not answer. They shall seek me early, but they shall not find me. For they have hated knowledge and did not choose the fear of the Lord. I want you to notice, verse 30 says, that they would none of my counsel and despised all my reproofs. And so the writer just saying, good people, that when we think about wisdom crying out and calling out to us, that if we'll listen to her and pay attention, there's three kinds of people in the world. There are people that are naive, they're young, they just don't know. There are other young people, they laugh and scoff. There was a young man at Madison years ago, I would turn around and write on the board, and when I write on the board, I was bald-headed in those days also, he'd pull his hair back and go like that to the class, and they'd all snicker, and I'd turn around and I could tell, you know, I knew what was going on. And I knew this boy was having all kind of problems. I was on drugs, so I can tell when somebody's on drugs. I know. When you've been around those people long enough, you can look at their eyes and the way they talk and the way they do and their attitudes about work and all sorts of other, and you can sense them. You can pick them out. And I knew this boy was having a problem with drugs. So I told his dad. I said, this boy's having a problem with drugs. And I told the boy, first of all, and he threw a fit. And I said, I'm going to tell your dad. And his dad said, you come to my house today, I'm going to beat you up for that, you know, talking like that. And so I went over there and we talked about it. And finally it all came out and this boy was having trouble. And as time went on, this boy, he mixed up some drugs for a friend of his who had just gotten married and had a baby. And because he was fooling with drugs, he mixed it wrong and his young friend died. And he just couldn't believe that God could forgive him for that. And so he tied some barbed wire around himself and around some concrete blocks and threw it in the river at Madison. And they found his body floated up by a restaurant down there in Madison. I've seen over and over young people who sat in my Bible classes. I've been in the same place 34 years. And I've watched every one of them. Young people who don't do their Bible lesson, they don't pay attention, they don't study, they don't want to get it. You're headed toward divorce and toward prison and probably toward death early. I've been watching. I'm telling you, that's the way it's worked. Few people survive it. Some do, but very few do. And so the writer's helping us see that wisdom is trying to tell you to listen, to pay attention, and to come to your senses. And I am stuck here, and this is as far as we're going. And I don't know what this has done or I've done. But we're not going to look at that anymore, okay? Now notice, after the writer tells about that, and you know, let me say this to you about that. I've got a couple minutes, so I just had to quit anyway. But let me read verse 31, 33. Therefore, they shall eat the fruit of their own way, and they shall be filled with their own devices. For the turning away the simple shall slay them, and the prosperity fool shall destroy them. But whosoever hearkeneth unto me shall dwell safely, and shall be quiet from fear of evil. So the writer's saying, listen, let me tell you something about the consequences in life. The consequence in life of evil will be so large if you don't listen to what God's telling you. But if you want those evil consequences to shrink down and be almost nothing, if you want to live a happy, successful life, listen and pay attention to what's being said. Because your life is on the line, and you've only got one shot at it. Now, I know you think, that old bald-headed man, he's bow-legged and his back's bowed over, and he can't know anything. He's out of touch, and he's talking about something that's so old. It was written years ago. How could it mean anything? Let me tell you, it is the bedrock for your future. And not only your life here, but your destiny when life is over. And I tell the story about a young fella that I met, went to school with. Matter of fact, some of you have ever been to the Casper car shows and seen some of the pinstriping that went on back in the years past. Ron Taylor, you probably saw his name on some of, if you are car muscle car fans. I went to school with Ron Taylor and his brother Jimmy. And one night they said, let's get in this car. We're going to go out and get some beer and go out to Mitchell Hill and drive around and drink some beer. And I said, no, I got to be home at 11 o'clock. My daddy's a Marine. And I said, I'll have a broke back at 11 minutes after 11 if I'm not home. And so I said, I've got to go home. Well, they got in that car and went down the road to a 90-mile-an-hour, hit a bridge and buttoned it. And it killed one of the Taylor boys and crippled up Jimmy. And when I'd go down to Louisville and go to the car show and see Jimmy out there, he said, how you doing, Mr. 1130 is what it was. Been 11. He said, how you doing, Mr. 1130? He always called me Mr. 1130. And he said, you know, he said, my daddy had given me and my brother an 1130 appointment to be home. I wouldn't be crippled today, and my brother would be here today probably. Listen to your mom and dad. They're trying to save you. They care about you. I know they get on your nerves, and you feel like they're out of touch with what's going on, and they don't know what the dress codes are in the world today. They want you to dress like somebody out of the 50s. Well, no, that wouldn't be good. Well, I'm trying to think. I don't remember when the miniskirt came out. It was in the 60s. But your parents love you. They care about you. And it hurts them. It's hard for them. They want so much for your life to be better than theirs. And it's not easy. It's not easy. Let me tell you, being a parent, if you think it's hard being a child, wait till you become a parent. And you're going to find out. Somebody has said, grandchildren to what God gives you for not choking your children when they were 16. You know, I've got 8 grandchildren and 1 on the way. And I have a great family. And I thank God for it. And I tell people, I sit down every morning with my boys at the table and we went over the Proverbs over and over. And sometimes they didn't want to study it. They didn't want to listen to it. And they'd get up and say, oh, come on, Dad, give us a break today, man. Let us eat our breakfast and let us be quiet. I said, boys, give me them bowls of cereal. I said, if you can't eat the spiritual food, you're not going to eat the physical food. Okay, Dad, go ahead. And they wanted that physical food, and so they got the spiritual food. And it's carried them down the road. And I tell people, when they were growing up, I thought, these boys are going to prison, and I can't keep them from it. That's the way it seemed when they were growing up. I thought, there's no way I'm going to keep them out of prison. But you know what? They listened to the information. And they've grown up to be godly men. And I love them. I love being around them. They give me such joy. And I just hope that God watches over them the whole journey. Well, thank you so much for listening. Does anybody want to make any comments? Corrections, please, if I made a mistake. Does anybody want to correct something that I misstated or missaid or got wrong? Anybody want to make any comment at all? Okay. Let's take a break. And we'll see what I broke on this thing. Yeah.